Daitsuna on the 10th of September, 1979. One must not see the striving and the exertion for the removal of the kilesas so that they are totally got rid of from the heart as something too hard or something too difficult. One must not think like this, for this is going contrary to the Dhamma principle in which the Lord Buddha taught us to strive and exert and endure and persevere. This is the principle of Dhamma. The seeing of the work of exertion for the purpose of eliminating the kilesas with the means of citta bhavana as something hard and difficult is the way of the kilesas which have been opposing Dhamma for a very long time, from time immemorial. When we begin to exert ourselves in the practice, they will begin to manifest themselves, contending with Dhamma by making us weak and discouraged. They will come up with various kinds of tricks which lead the citta to go and think about the various things and lead it astray, in the end making one become irresolute and weak. In this way, they can still have a grip on us. The practitioner of Dhamma must be wise, constantly observing the Cetasika Dhamma, the thoughts that arise within our hearts, seeing whether these thoughts are going in the way of Dhamma in such a way as to clear away the kilesas, or going against the way of Dhamma in such a way as to trample over and destroy the Dhamma within our own hearts. This is a fundamental point that we have to give due consideration to. We have to be inclined towards thinking and considering, and to be firm with the principle of reason, and constantly watch and observe the Cetasika Dhamma, which is Sankhara. There are two kinds of Sankhara. The Sankharas that go in the way of Devadatta are the Sankharas that constantly destroy oneself, the truth and Dhamma. The Sankharas in the way of Dhamma are the ones that will uproot and eliminate the kilesas. These are of another category. They both arise from our concocting and thinking, and they are classified according to their direction, the way they are going, either in the good or the bad way. When they are going in the way of accumulating the kilesas and obstructing the Dhamma, they are called by the Lord Samudaya. When these Cetasikas go the way of clearing the path, they lead us to the state of freedom from dukkha, then they are called the Magga, which is the way leading us out of dukkha. We have to observe, because the citta constantly thinks and concocts up things. It is similar to a football that is being kicked back and forth. it is always rolling here and there, and cannot remain still. How can the citta remain still? It is constantly being surrounded by the kilesas, which are like feet that constantly kick the heart, to go in this way or in that way. To constantly think about that and concoct about this. It is therefore necessary to depend on the principle of Dhamma as the means of correcting this. This is correcting those things that are antagonistic to the heart until they steadily disappear by the means of one's strenuous exertion, endurance, and perseverance. If one does not persevere and endure, then one cannot be said to be one who is totally committed to one's work. If one does not strive, then one cannot be said to be following the way of the Tathagata, of the sage. This diligent effort is for the purpose of building up people to be good. This is striving in the right way. If it is dukkha, then we are willing to face it. We are born in a world that is full of dukkha. We are in the midst of it. It is not possible to separate ourselves from this dukkha, especially the dukkha of the heart, which is extremely severe and bears down heavily on us, subjecting us to much suffering, much more than the dukkha of the body. The thing that is most outstanding in exhibiting both sukha and dukkha is the heart. We must never have the understanding that this body brings us any distinct happiness. For in truth, it can only bring us pain and dukkha when one becomes ill. This dukkha is very profound, but when the body is normal, it doesn't seem to exhibit any happiness at all. It doesn't exhibit anything, but it will distinctly exhibit dukkha when the body is in an abnormal state. When we become sick and afflicted with disease, the dukkha from this illness will be extremely profound. If one's citta hasn't had any training before, then it will become bothered and troubled by this illness. There will then be two diseases at the same time. But the dukkha and sukha found within the heart are both distinct and profound. When the heart is in the state of sukha, then it is joyful and happy, whether it is of the world or Dhamma. This happiness will appear distinct and profound. Both states of dukkha and sukha in the heart manifest themselves very outstandingly and very distinctively, much more so than those of the body. I really don't want to say that the body has any sukha, for rather it seems only to manifest dukkha. There is only dukkha when the body is normal and healthy. It doesn't seem to exhibit any sukha at all. It just functions normally. But when the dukkha appears, it really shows itself. The intensity of pain corresponds to the intensity of the illness. The citta then loses its guard and becomes involved. By clinging to the body under the influence of its own delusion. This is like trying to lift a whole mountain and roll it over. How can that be possible? The principle of truth, which is anicca, dukkha, and anatta, is all over the body. It is much greater than a whole mountain. How can we go against it? We must rather investigate to see according to the truth of these things. The citta will then be able to emancipate and uproot itself from these things, as it is capable of seeing the truth and not being fooled by the tricks of dukkha vedana that arises in the body and in the heart. The practitioner must think, reflect, analyze, and examine, constantly watching the citta and not letting go of it. The citta is the most valuable possession if it has been trained and developed. But at this time, if it hasn't yet exhibited any of its worth and value, and its marvel and wonder, the reason is that those things that are of no worth are covering it and obscuring it. For this reason, it is necessary to depend on the work of cleansing and washing away these things to the utmost of one's energy and ability. The citta is the principal determinant for the process of birth, aging, illness, and death, of the ceaseless wandering in the vata samsara, of the sukha and dukkha that always exhibit themselves. The heart is the cause of all of these things. They don't come from anywhere else. And it is this citta that will be the main character that stands out distinctively when it has been totally cleansed to the state of purity. It is the principal determinant, or the absolute principle. This description really accords with the truth. This absolute principle means that one is now totally rid of all worries. All the past now gathers into the present that is now purified. Concerning the future are the things that will happen. Where and when the citta will be, this will also be clearly perceived within the present. One is now full, complete, and perfect, right within the present. One is contented within the present. There is no more hunger or craving, or hankering for the past or the future, because the citta is absolutely complete and perfect. This state of the citta is more sublime and lofty than all the rest of the other states that the citta has gone through. Therefore, the citta should be trained and developed and cleansed and purified until it arrives at the true and genuine citta. This is to be done without relenting in our striving or exertion. Sati is absolutely vital. I have said this many times before. In all of the desanas that I have given, I have always talked about sati, for if I hadn't talked about it, there would not be anything that could be used as a principle and basis for one's practice and exertion. In any kind of work and undertaking, if it is lacking in sati, then there is a great loss. This is especially so with our practice and exertion. Sati is terribly important. We have to be vigilant, careful, and cautious, constantly taking care of our sati, until it develops and becomes sampajanya. According to the Dhamma principle, the translation of sati is mindfulness. This is the periodic mindfulness that arises any time that one establishes it. When one has been establishing mindfulness for a long time and been constantly nourishing it and constantly using it and constantly developing it, it then becomes sampajanya. This is the second level. The third level is the automatic sati. When one has got to that stage, then one no longer has to take care of it, for it will be ever present, as this is its nature. From the first moment when one gets up to the final moment, when one goes to sleep, one will never be able to recollect one single moment when one might have been absent-minded, leaving the citta exposed to all the bad influences that trample and damage it. That is why it is called automatic sati. Or during the time of the Lord Buddha, Maha Sati. Both Maha Sati and Maha Panya are an inseparable pair. This is true for the one who practices. As soon as sati arises, then Panya will follow immediately behind. Both of them will be tracking the citta, the sankhara that thinks and concocts. This is not to mention the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches that come into contact with the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body, for they are of coarser kinds. For even the citta that concocts up things within itself cannot slip away from sati. Sati will become aware of the citta when it begins to go into motion, concocting up the various affairs. And panya will immediately follow right behind, curbing and restraining it, and putting it out immediately. This is with the exception of some aspects which we would like to retain for our investigation until we come to true understanding. Then we can let go of them. They will be retained until we have investigated before letting go of them. Normally, at this stage, whatever comes into contact will immediately disappear. As soon as it concocts, it will immediately disappear. It is the same way with the external things. The contact between the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches, and the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body will immediately cease and disappear as soon as they have come into contact. There isn't any need to eliminate them, because all of these things have already been got rid of. As one already knows about them, knowing their true nature. When the citta has truly grasped the nature of these external things, then this is the way it will happen. And when it has fully understood about the nature of the khandhas, then it will also be the same way. In the end, sati and panya will be able to truly comprehend the nature of sankhara, which is very subtle, and sanya, which is even more subtle. It is extremely subtle, for it is nama dhamma. As soon as they arise, sati and panya will know what they are up to. And this is the result of developing one's sati and training one's panya to investigate and analyze the various aspects of Dhamma. One will then become gradually more proficient and adept, without any doubt. This is the way of the Lord Buddha. This is the way of all of the Savakas who transcended dukkha. This was the path they trod. This was the way they practiced. They were never discouraged or relented in their exertion. Therefore, we who are the followers of the Tathagata, who stand out distinctively as those who have taken up the way, as the practitioners, as those who have taken up the robe, and who are striving for the state of deliverance, must take the way of the Lord Buddha and take it deeply to heart. We must not become discouraged, and we must not relent. Let us face up to any kind of dukkha. The main thing is to have the kilesas disappear from our heart. They will gradually fade away due to our exertion. There is dukkha for everyone, for this world is just a heap of dukkha. It is the world of anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta. This is without any doubt. Wherever one is in the world, one can never escape from coming into contact with the world of anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta, either in the body or in the heart. We are not living above the world of anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta. So how can we not experience dukkha? Even when one is not exerting in one's practice, one also has to undergo dukkha. So it is far better to experience dukkha while we are exerting, rather than suffer it while we are being idle and doing nothing, which doesn't do us any good. As practitioners, you must really exert yourselves. Really commit yourselves. The Dhamma or the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana seem to be challenging us right within our citta. Don't have the understanding that they are anywhere else. The dukkha, torment, and misery within the heart is much more profound than that of the body. What is samuddaya? The Lord summarized it thus. Nandi Raka Sahagata Tattara Tattara Pinandini Saya Tidang Kama Tanha Pava Tanha Vipava Tanha. This is the business of Samudaya. The citta that is being obsessed with Nandi Raka, which is passion and infatuation, as well as with Gama Tanha, Pava Tanha, and Vipava Tanha, the craving for sensual gratification, the craving for being, and the craving for non-being, has in it the major factors of Samudaya. Where do these things arise from? They arise from the heart. Their source is found within the heart. They all branch out from the source within the heart, going out by way of the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body, as well as by way of sanya arammana. These are the pathways of the kilesas that are within the heart. It is therefore necessary to analyze and investigate, correcting and overcoming those things that the citta becomes entangled with. Find out the reason why the citta becomes involved and entangled with them. One must search and probe until one can see it very clearly. If one is attached to rupa, or form, then one must differentiate and analyze this body until one can see it clearly, so that the citta will lose its perplexity for the body and then withdraw within. What are the forms of men and women actually like? Differentiate and analyze to see the flesh, the sinews and the bones, the hair of the head, the hair of the body, the nails and the teeth, going on from the external to the internal. We have to see in accordance with the principle of truth and reason. Sati and Panya must be continuously and constantly concentrating on these objects. It must not relent in this work. By merely practicing blindly, for this is not the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha. This is not the way of exertion. This is not the way of the wise. The way of the wise is the way of intense determination and resolution, continuous concentration, and being fully intent for complete penetration and realization of the truth that one still hasn't understood. One has to get to true and clear understanding, and then the doubts and questions will disappear by themselves. The fixed views and upadana will withdraw naturally by themselves, once one has fully understood. What is the use of clinging to them, or to hold any fixed views about them? This is the way of doing the investigation. Here I am only demonstrating this one particular method, so that you can expand it on your own, as it suits your character and inclination, and the techniques that you are proficient in. This is when the citta is attached to rupa, or form. And that is the way you must analyze and differentiate these forms. you have to analyze and investigate your own body so that you can see it clearly and distinctively. Whether it is the external or the internal, you can take them up and investigate them. And this will not be wrong. They are all namaka. The citta is attached to the external. It has love and hate for the external. The external is the samudaya. When the citta has understood these external things with the means of sati and panya, this is the magga, the means of uprooting and correcting one's questions and doubts, one's attachments and fixed views. One can do this gradually and bring it gradually inwards into the heart. The essence of practice is in the application of our energy and effort. We must not speculate or imagine about the magga, pala, and nibbana, or about the time and place of these things, for this is entirely incorrect. When the kilesas arise, they pay no attention to the time and place, for they arise right within the heart, right at this moment. This is where we have to focus our attention. Wherever the kilesas arise, it is similar to the appearance of fire. Let's put it out right at that place. Let's focus our sati and panya right at that point. Don't be concerned with the time and place. Dukkha and samudaya are found within this heart. This dukkha is the dukkha of the heart. The dukkha of the body is one form of the truth of dukkha concerning the body. The dukkha of the heart is another form of the truth of dukkha concerning the heart exclusively. Samudaya is solely the affair of the heart. It is kama tanha, the craving for sensual gratification. Bhava tanha, the craving for being. Being this or being that. Vibhava tanha, the craving for something that doesn't exist. Even with the things that do not exist, one still craves for them. Having been born, one doesn't want to die. How is that possible? Vibhava tanha, they are all found within the heart. Nirodha, the Lord referred to as the consequence of the magga. It is the cessation of dukkha. This cessation of dukkha is a gradual one, following the strength of the magga, beginning with sati and panya, and so forth. This is the factor that corrects and uproots the kilesas, gradually eliminating them and putting them out. Nirodha, the cessation of the dukkha that is created by the kilesas, will gradually come about. When the magga consisting of sati, panya, and the rest becomes strengthened and more powerful, then more and more of the kilesas will gradually disappear. As with each passing day, we uproot more and more of the kilesas with our strenuous exertion that is efficient and able with the faculty of Mahasati and Mahapanya, which are the most vital of all the faculties. We will get to see the kilesas being expelled from the heart, seeing them destroyed and vanquished as we progress along. Whether we are sitting in Samadhi Bhavana, or walking Jhangama, or while we are eating, or just walking here and there, Sati and Panya will relentlessly and ceaselessly be doing the work of eradicating and eliminating the kilesas all the time, with the exception of when we take a rest, or when the citta takes a rest in the state of samadhi. This is the only time when the sati and panya of this type will not be working. But as soon as one comes out of this resting state, then sati panya will continue on with the work, constantly battling with and contending with the kilesas, until these kilesas steadily disappear from the heart. They don't disappear from anywhere else, but from the citta. The kilesas, tanha and asava, collect or amass inside the citta. Therefore, sati and panya must be developed and increased with the support of one's strenuous exertion and the application of one's energy. Then we will see the kilesas steadily disappear from the heart until we will come to the stage when we will have to dig and search for them. These are the subtle kinds of kilesa. Once one gets to the stage where sati and panya become very powerful, then the kilesas will cower and be subdued. They will be looking for places to hide. But wherever they hide, they will be discovered by sati and panya, that is constantly searching and digging for them. They will all be readily destroyed. The way of the kilesas is very extensive in the beginning stages, when we haven't yet trained ourselves and washed them away. Think about forms and sights, for instance. They are all over the physical world. And with any kind of sound, we will always become attached to them. We are attached to the sounds that are good and the sounds that are bad, or the sounds of criticism and censure. We are also attached to the sounds of praise and applause. We are attached to sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches. For this reason, it is said that the kilesa are all over the physical universe. But when one investigates, one will see that it is just the flow of the heart that goes out and attaches itself to these things, has fixed views about these things, and has presumption and assumption about them, and is deluded in them. Once one has investigated, then the flow will turn back into the heart. When one has come to true understanding, then it will steadily withdraw inwards. The scope of our work that used to spread all over the entire physical world will now become narrower. It was the kilesas that spread the scope of our work. We have to round them in until they eventually gather within the khandhas. We have let go of all the other things with our means of sati and panya, without any doubt. We can now lay down the investigation of the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches, which are the external things. We can now stop, because we have truly understood them. What is the use of doing more investigation? One knows this clearly within one's heart. One knows all about them and what they really are. What is there to become attached to or have any fixed views about? The one who has attachment and fixed views for them is the heart. But the heart has now withdrawn from them. The heart has already let go of them. So what is the use of investigating them anymore? They now become involved within the body and the khandhas. These are the five khandhas. Now we have to analyze and differentiate the rupa khandha, the body. We have to investigate and see it clearly, be it any part or any condition, as they are all interrelated. Whichever is the part that we are skilled in or inclined to in the investigation, that is the part on which we must focus the investigation. And it can be about anicchang, dukkhang, or anatta. They are all similar. One can take any part of the tilakkhana, the three characteristics, because it will be equivalent to taking all three of them. This is because their functions are interdependent. Once one has understood any particular part of the body, then this understanding will spread throughout all the rest of the body. Until one thoroughly understands about the body with the means of panya taught by the Lord Buddha, then how can one be attached to it? How can one be attached to this body? What is the use of being attached to bones? What is the use of being attached to skin and flesh? Is it really an animal or people? Is it really I or mine? The flesh is just the flesh. The bones are just the bones. The sinews are just the sinews. And the skin is just the skin. They rot and become bloated. So how can this rotting and bloating become us? How can they be I or mine? Once they are disintegrated into the earth, water, air, and fire, they are just these elements arising from rotting, bloating, decay, and decomposition. How can it be I? It is just earth. And we know that it is just earth. But why do we take it as ourselves? Water is water, and we already know that. So how can we take it as I or mine? We have seen the water in the fields. The air is just the air that blows here and there. How can we take it as I or mine? we can see fire. And how can we take that as I or mine? This is panya. We must investigate until we can see it very clearly and distinctively within the heart. The Lord called this kind of seeing true panya. One can see it and know it very profoundly. One will then withdraw with the panya that has birth. He will do it until he rocks and shakes the earth inside, while doing the investigation of vetana and contending with it. This is one form of gallantry. This is to be utterly fearless and stout-hearted. This is when one does the investigation and analysis of dukkha vetana. Wherever it arises, that is where we must cope and contend with it. We have to unravel and disentangle it. The citta's concentration must be continuous and persistent. One must not lose one's mindfulness. If one has to die, let it happen. Once it is time to go, wherever one is, then one will have to die. This world is the world of the cemetery. It is the world of birth and death. If one should die while sitting in bhavana, well, let's see it happen. There is no need to invite the bhikkhus to recite the Kusala Dhamma for us. Right at this moment, we are developing the Kusala Dhamma ourselves. And this is wisdom. So why bother the bhikkhus to come and chant the Kusala Dhamma for us and give us merit, as we are now making merit for ourselves? We are now instilling happiness within ourselves. Probe into it and examine it. Don't be afraid. No matter how severe dukkha vetana might be, one must not wish it to go away. One must really put in the effort, really get to see the truth. Let's get to see the face of vetana very clearly. Let's get to see the body very clearly and see it as it really is. See every kind of vetana as just vetana, for they are nothing more than that. One will then come across the citta that is involved with these things. One must then turn inwards and look at the citta. And the citta is just the citta. That is just vetana. And this is just the body. They are known just as they are, without disturbing or troubling one another. And when there is no more fixed view, presumption or assumption about anything, then these three truths are complete and perfect. When they are true just as they are, then the citta is not troubled. It is no longer shaken. No matter how much dukkha vetana will appear, it will be able to see it very clearly. It can look at it without any qualms, for it has already understood with panya. It has now understood the truth of all the dukkha vetana. One can see this very clearly. One will see more clearly as panya permeates further inward, regardless of how subtle vetana might be. For instance, sukha vetana. When the citta has entered into the very subtle state, then mostly there will just be sukha vetana. It will stand out very distinctively and profoundly. We must also get to know this sukha vetana. We must not think that dukkha vetana is the only dukkha there is. For if we are deluded in sukha vetana, this can also become samudaya. We have to analyze this so that we can see it clearly. We have never known or seen that sukha is samudaya. We have only heard of the dukkhaṃ ariya satyaṃ. The Lord called the kilesas that creates dukkha the term samudaya. If the citta becomes deluded in and attached to the sukha within itself, then this can also become samudaya. We have to differentiate so that we can see it clearly. Paññā can never be exhausted. It knows the subtle kinds of sukha, and at the same time, it also knows the subtle kinds of dukkha. Knowing it as dukkha vetana, for this is still samuti. The investigation of the four nama dhammas, vetana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana, can be focused on any one particular object of the four, because they are similar. It isn't necessary to investigate all four of them, like investigating sankhara, sanya, and vijnana as well. This will be merely keeping tabs on them, for this is merely a plan or a theory, which has to do with the arrangement of things in order or sequence, and turns into the way of the world instead of the way of Dhamma. If it is Dhamma, it has to do with practice. Be it any object or conditions that one is investigating, it must be real. One must really come to true understanding, and one must really investigate until one truly realizes the truth, and until everything is real and true, and conforms with everything else. For instance, when one is investigating vetana, it will also conform and connect to sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. And when one has investigated many, many times, one will also be capable of cutting them all off. The attachment of the body is now cut off. The upadana of the body has now disappeared. One investigates vetana, sukha, dukkha, and neutral vetana. It is not only the dukkha and the neutral vetana that one truly understands, for one also understands the truth of sukha, vetana, of the body. One lets go of them. Sanya, memory, recognition or preconceived notion. Sankhara, thinking and concocting. They just flare up continuously. As soon as they arise, they immediately cease. They just arise and cease. How can we take them as an entity, a self, a person, or an animal? All there is to them is just arising and ceasing, that flares and flashes up continuously within the citta. One must get to see it in this way. This is the seeing with panya. It is the same way with vijnana. It acknowledges or receives the data of the external things that come into contact. As soon as they come into contact, they also immediately disappear. Then vijnana also ceases correspondingly. But the true knowing, which is the citta, doesn't cease. One keeps on investigating and investigating until the kilesas have no more place to hide. All the hiding places are gone. All the hiding places of sight, sound, smell, taste and touch have all been totally destroyed. They then run and converge into the five khandhas. One digs and searches into the five khandhas, using the fire of Dhamma, the Tapa Dhamma, beginning with the Rupa Khanda. One must keep on chasing them. When one has analyzed the body and seen it clearly, then it is just like the external things, for it is just merely elements. How can the citta become attached to it? For it is just a natural process. As the citta is deeply impressed with panya, it will immediately let go of it. Sanya, sankhara, and vijnana are just conditions that continuously flare on and off. That is just the way they are. But in themselves, they have no meaning or any concept of themselves. It is we who make them concepts and then become deluded in them. When panya has investigated until one becomes deeply impressed and deeply takes it to heart, then one will let go of all of them. One will let go of rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. One will let go of all of them. All that is left is just the citta. The kilesas now only have the citta. They do not have a way to go out, because all of the pathways have been cut off. All of the access ways to the eyes, ears, nose, tongue and body have been severed with the means of panya of one type. They can no longer come up through the ways of rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana by claiming any one of them as I or mine. For they have been cut off by panya of another type. This type of panya is the automatic panya. Once the kilesa has no other place to go, it then runs back into its original point, its original home. This place is where it was always the master and the ruler that rules over the world of the vata chakra, or the vata citta. Do you understand? The kilesas are inside the vata citta. Avicca is inside the citta. All the rest of the kilesas have been destroyed. All of their branches, access ways, and pathways have all been cut off. All that is left is just the citta. This is where one digs and searches. This is now the place where the kilesas gather and converge. Panya must now concentrate all of its effort into this place by taking the citta as the object or the target of its investigation by way of anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta, like all the rest of the sapava dhammas. The difference is that this is more subtle than all of the sapava dhammas that one has investigated before. One must not hold on to the citta. If the citta should be destroyed, then let it happen. One must now take up this citta and take it like a football and kick it very hard. Now if the citta cannot withstand this test, then when these kinds of kilesas come to cessation, and the citta also comes to cessation, then let it happen. Let us not cherish or be possessive of it. We must really kick at it. Whatever is samuti, is anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta, and it will disappear. It will come to cease. The citta that is purified will not have the anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta embracing it and pervading over it. The citta will stand out distinctively. This is freedom. This is the citta that has attained to freedom. It is right here. One who has attained to and accomplished the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana attains and accomplishes right here. One doesn't attain to that place or that time, which is just mere speculation and a waste of time. One must focus one's attention and concentration right here. The Dukkha Satya and the Samudaya Satya that obscure and wrap up the citta are right within the heart. The Magga, the instrument that clears away dukkha and samudaya, is also right here. This is samadhi, sati, and panya. Nirodha is the consequence of magga. When one has destroyed and vanquished samudaya, then dukkha will disappear. It will come to cessation. The cessation of dukkha is nirodha. But nirodha itself doesn't do anything. Nirodha is merely the cessation of dukkha that comes about due to the power of magga. When the time comes for elimination, one must totally obliterate. One must not leave the slightest trace of samuti within the citta. If the citta is destroyed due to the fact that it cannot withstand the test, then let it become totally obliterated. We have to totally destroy and demolish these things. But in the end, the citta doesn't come to cease. It is avichara, that is the samuti, the anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta, that has come to an end. The Lord said, Punya papa pahina pukala. One who has let go of both good and evil. One lets go of them right at that place. It was there where the Lord Buddha gained his enlightenment. It was there where he put out lives and existences, the kilesas, tanha, and asava. It was there where he became supreme and noble. It was there where he was the great Sāsadā, the great master, and the great teacher of the world. It is in the citta. It was the same way with all of the savakas. They accomplished right at that place, with the means and techniques that we have discussed here, as the tool of correcting the kilesas, as the means of washing away the kilesas. Other than that, nothing can do it. Apart from the Dhamma principle, the kilesas are not afraid of anything in this world. The only thing that they are afraid of is Dhamma. For this reason, when we begin to exert ourselves with Dhamma, then the kilesas will always oppose and go against us. They will resist us until we forget what we are doing and become lured and enticed by the tune of the kilesas that put us to sleep so that we are not aware of ourselves. That is why our exertion is wishy-washy. It is not solid and substantial. If this is the way it is, it can be quite troubling and burdensome to my heart. And there are many of you here. The numbers are increasing every day. What can I do when you come to me? I really have sympathy for you and think of you and your benefit. But when I think about it, things can get watery and insubstantial. When there are very few, then it is very concentrated and solid. With a big pot of stew, there is just a lot of water in it and a lot of cabbage. But with a very small pot of stew, it has good taste and flavor. But here we have to try, even if it is a large pot. We have to divide it up so that we each have a small pot, so that we can be thick and concentrated and solid and substantial. We must not relent in our strenuous exertion. We must always see the harm of the kilesas. We who are going to vanquish the kilesas and who want to be free from the kilesas, who are intent on deliverance and nibbana, the realm free from all forms of samuti, must see the harm of every kind of kilesa. We have to look and focus our attention at the citta. We will not be disappointed or go off the mark. This place has been the correct place ever since time immemorial. It is not just of this present time, for it has always been so. Every kind of kilesa has already existed within the heart of all sentient beings. There must be only one Dhamma, for there is only one kilesa. They are all harmful to the citta. Every one of them is of one nature. That is, they are harmful. None of them is profitable or beneficial. And it is only the Dhamma that can subdue the kilesas. Other than that, it is not possible. For the kilesas are not afraid of anything else. That is why we have to strive in our practice and be vigilant and watchful of the kilesas that will come and destroy the Dhamma and bring down our exertion. End of Detsana.